Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And today is August 10th, the year of our Lord, 2013. And I know I'm supposed to say current era, aren't I? But CE.
I don't know. CE. Which era is current? Anytime you say things like modern or current era, just think what they're going to say in the future if something else changes. Well, we don't call it the current era anymore because it's not current. Art was something from the 1960s, or modern portfolio theory.
Well, that's from 1952. So.
It's very modern.
As opposed to the old-fashioned portfolio theory from prior to 1952. Yeah, that's... anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. I think I already said that. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We had some spirited debate about the Affordable Care Act last hour. We've actually got a lot of really good stuff on the economy to talk about this hour.
Can I say something really good?
Oh, I think we should just play music instead. Nobody's going to want to hear.
This is from the Wall Street Journal, August 7th, 2013. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed abruptly in June, as exports surged and imports declined.
Lowest since right in the middle of the recession.
But this is, we basically, and it's hard for people to get their mind around this, two things happened.
Well, let's say what that is first. It means that we are exporting a lot of stuff.
A lot more than we're importing.
Usually we have a big imbalance. We're importing a bunch more stuff than we are exporting. We're still importing more things than we're exporting, but not a lot more anymore.
Well, this is an interesting little sideline to this. The manufacturing index that's most closely followed is what's called the purchasers index, and it is the people who work at manufacturing firms who are purchasing raw materials to make manufactured goods. The purchasers index, PPI is called, is in the United States is sitting at 56 right now, which doesn't, so what's that mean? 56, anything above 50 is growth. And 56 is, amazingly as it may sound to some people, is really high growth. That's about as good as it gets. The highest I've ever seen it anywhere is 58. And of course, an interesting point in this is that right now, the fastest growing manufacturing economy, the manufacturing sector of economy in all the major nations of the world, the one that's growing the fastest is the one in the United States of America. Number two, by the way, is Great Britain. You were mentioning that they were following our example on things. So we got two things going on at the same time. The exports from the United States to the rest of the world in June broke all previous records. I mean, it's
some of that is manufactured stuff that caused that. Some of it is the fact that we're exporting oil and gas at high volume.
Right, it's mostly manufactured. And yes, we are still importing more than we're exporting because we do import principally a lot of oil. But this is it's an interesting point. But I want to bring something else in there that my geeky mind thinks is important. The dollar has risen against foreign currencies recently. It's continuing to rise against foreign currencies. Now, the euro euro has gone up more than the dollar against other currencies, and nobody completely understands that one, by the way. Although I will say I think there may be some manipulation at the Federal Reserve level going on.
I think that's what's going on. The European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve have been in talks.
It's actually dropped a little bit against the yen and against the Chinese currency, but that's not the big thing. The big thing is people around the world are buying U.S. goods, U.S. manufactured goods, for a very good, I like that, reason.
Reason.
Yes. We have the highest quality manufactured products on the planet right now, and used to be the Germans were famous for that. Well, actually, ours are now considered. There was a survey done by International Trade Commission, and they determined that around the world, made in the United States is considered a higher badge of quality than made in Germany or even made in Switzerland. And there's a lot of negatives, obviously, about what goes on in our economy, about the fact that our unemployment rate is higher than we'd like it to be. But two things stand out when I look at it, and they're very fundamental things. One, our manufacturing output in the United States is higher than it has ever been in history and is growing faster than anyone else on the planet. And our exports are higher than they have ever been in history, and by the way, are growing very nicely. We have we've had little dips here and there, but to give you some idea, inflation-adjusted exports from the United States were about 30 back in 1990. Were about $35 billion a month. Currently, they're about $175 billion a month. And again, this is adjusted for inflation. The exports from the United States from 1990 to the present, that's the only graph that I have here in front of me right now, there's been some dips and slides along the way, but we are currently exporting many times what we were exporting at the end of the 1980s in real terms. And our exports have grown much faster than the world economy, which means not only are we the largest exporter on the planet, not only do, of all the people exporting, all the nations exporting on the planet, do we have the highest percentage, our chunk of the pie is growing faster than that of the world, than the world economy is growing. But definition, that's a kind of a obvious thing if you think about it. But the point I wanted to make is that when we get to feeling bad about our economy and we think things are really rough, it's important to recognize that some great progress is being made. Now, we don't have the jobs back that we'd like to have. We don't have consumer spending back up. Matter of fact, the consumer spending was a little bit weak last month. But there's a very interesting point there, too, and I realize I'm monopolizing here. Let me get this one last little bit of good news out. An interesting thing occurred last month. Consumer borrowing increased, but within that, some very pleasant news emerged. The borrowing increase was all for long-term non-revolving credit, meaning things like automobiles and appliances where you borrow the money specifically to buy the item, and the item will stay in use for a number of years, and it has significant value. Revolving credit, that's credit card debt, continued to drop, which, of course, one of the reasons we're seeing the consumer side of things not grow as fast as we would like, and we're seeing unemployment stay up a little bit. People are basically just not using their credit cards to borrow as much money. But they are now buying automobiles at an ever-increasing rate, just like we forecast a few years ago. And that is a big plus. Basically, what I want to say is things may have paused a little bit, but every sign that I look at says we are going to hit our stride again before too long. There's some other indicators, but I want to break here so Jake can have put a word in edgewise. So stick a word in edgewise.
A word.
Okay, that's good. That was now on I its can edge. Start again. Yes. Okay.
I wanted to talk a bit about pretty much exactly what you were talking about. Continue that concept of. Well, let me take a step back here, because I'm going to bring up a concern that is given to me by almost every person that talks to me about the Federal Reserve or about bank lending. And we talk about this on the air almost every week, but I tend to think we've covered it and people don't worry about it anymore, but we keep getting asked. So we're going to talk about it again and again, probably, and again after that. What the Federal Reserve is doing right now, by definition, cannot lead to inflation. And by what it's doing right now, I mean QE3. And I realize what I've just said is going to cause a lot of people to say, what is he talking about? What are they doing? Going to lead to inflation and so on and so forth. And if you look up what it is that they're buying in QE3, or QE2 for that matter, or QE1.
They were buying a ship.
They were buying ships. They were buying the Queen of England. No.
No, right.
No. They're buying troubled mortgage-backed securities. Troubled. That's very clearly defined. They're not buying at the price they were issued for. They're not buying at premium. They're buying at discount. Which, if you strictly were talking about the from the depths of the recession coming forward, maybe from that perspective you could say we've had inflation since then. However, when you consider the amount of deflation we had at the beginning of the recession and the deflation that we've had in other aspects of the economy since then, when we buy back something, say there's $100 sitting on the table, you take that $100, this is a very, very small economy, you take that $100 and you buy a crate of tomatoes, doesn't matter what you buy, it's $100 of tomatoes, okay? These are tomatoes that don't go bad over time.
Really big crate.
Really big crate of tomatoes. And because the prices of tomatoes have fallen drastically and nobody wants the tomatoes, it's not worth $100 anymore. So that $100 is not inflated, it is deflated. Follow so far, everybody? Okay, so now the tomatoes are worth $20. And I'm not being extreme here. This is what we were talking about when we were talking about mortgage-backed securities. The Federal Reserve has stepped in and said to the person that went out and bought these tomatoes, I will buy those tomatoes from you, not at $20, at $80, maybe even at $90. And that is the best offer that these tomato owners have had in years. So they turn to the Federal Reserve and they say, all right, here you go. Here's my tomatoes. I want my $80. They got their $80. So has the $100 inflated if you have $80 in your hand now? No. Very simple answer there. It is no. And when we get into these complex derivatives and we've got huge packages with large numbers being applied to them, we lose the concept that there is less money being exchanged in these purchases than originated in the purchases. That means you can't have inflation in it. However, if our economy continues to grow, if we still are creating more value and more money is being created in the system outside of the tomato purchase that we're talking about here, eventually those tomato purchases will lead to too much money in the economy. Eventually, the Federal Reserve will say these tomatoes need to trade at fair market value, which is what the Federal Reserve is saying about the QE3. If the economy continues to recover, we're going to stop purchasing mortgage-backed securities on the open market. So that is, in a nutshell, what we're talking about here. Now, if in 2006, the Federal Reserve had gone out and looked on the market for mortgage-backed securities and increased the amount of what they would pay based on the market value, so they're on the market for $100, then the Federal Reserve did what it's doing today, basically, instead of paying $20, they're paying $80. If they said, we're not going to pay $100, we're going to pay $160, we would have had inflation, no doubt. There would have been $60 more in the economy than was in circulation before that. That is what inflation is. So hopefully I haven't confused the matter. Hopefully this has cleared it up a bit.
Right, and I happen to agree that I think the Federal Reserve is acting appropriately, and I think it's a necessity. And it also seems to be working. It's still going to be a while before we get out of this, and there's a couple of reasons. Before we feel like it's over.
Right.
Probably the prime reason that we don't feel like it's over has to do with the fact that wages are, in fact, declining.
Now, correct. And unemployment is still, I mean, we have less people employed today than we did before the recession. How can we say that's a recovery if there's so many fewer people with jobs?
And it really comes down, and we've talked about this before, the fact that our exports are up, our manufacturing is up at record levels, both exports and manufactured exports are at record levels, is a big plus to the long term in the economy. However, one of the primary reasons that manufacturing is at a record level and our exports are at a record level is we're able to produce goods at a lower price than we did before the recession. We're able to produce goods at a very competitive price that is very, and the things that we're manufacturing in the United States are very consistently high quality. Why is that? I hate to break this to you, folks. It's because robots are making more of it. And when a, just give you, I'm going to use a perhaps poor example, but prior to the recession and the bankruptcy of General Motors and a lot of other things, there was actually, there were actually workers who did nothing but bolt on fenders.
Yep. They had a kind of a bolt gun thing going.
All day long, they would bolt on fenders. If they weren't feeling well that one day, they might not get some of the bolts exactly right. And this caused a fall off in quantity. And the second thing is they were being paid very well to bolt on the fenders.
Mm-hmm. Very
now,
well. Union wages.
Now there is a robot, an arm, that reaches in and bolts on the fenders. It does it consistently, exactly right, every time.
It doesn't feel bad.
And it doesn't have health care costs.
It doesn't retire.
Right. Well,
when it stops working, they just...
They scrap it.
Well, wait. And by retire, I don't mean it doesn't put new tires on old vehicles, because they actually do that now. They do retire in that sense.
There is a large bug crawling up the wall behind you.
It is a stink bug, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, then probably you ought to let it go about its business.
I won't be trapping it.
I glanced over, and I immediately saw a movement behind you crawling up the gray
walls.
I
was in the middle of discussing retirement for robots, and you got this disgusted look on your face, and I thought, maybe he's an advocate for robot retirees.
So, and we don't, you know, there's two aspects to that. One, from a business point of view, from an investment point of view, building cars is a really good thing. From a human point of view, and
if you were operating a bolt gun for 30 years of your life,
right, and
probably
and,
not a good thing.
And you've got a big mortgage on a house in Detroit, and
based on union wages that you got for using the bolt gun.
So there's a plus in it, and it's going to take a while for us to dig out of this. It typically takes, from the time we get a major economic shift like this. This is not good news, folks, so I'm about to tell you. Typically, from the time we get a major economic shift, and let's just call 2009 the major economic shift, it takes 10 years for the economy to adjust and for the unemployment rate to drop to a level similar to what we saw before the shift. Now, what that means is 2019.
Yeah.
Now, maybe we can get it done quicker this time because we didn't go through a full-blown depression.
We will have an economic growth in aspects of our economy that is far better than what it was before. But when it comes to the employment, the thing that people actually look at when they're talking about, you know, in their day-to-day life, how is it impacting me if I lost my job in the recession and I can't find a new one? That's kind of the point at which we can say this is what a recovery is, and that will be 2019 probably.
And to give you an example, the largest element other than consumer spending, which is a secondary thing, you have to have jobs before you can get consumer spending up, in the economy is housing construction historically. Housing construction is at a fraction of where it was before, and it does, and while we're seeing some pickup in it, it's not good enough to even come close to making up to where we once were, even before the bubble, the real estate bubble. And there's several really good reasons for that. But if we go down and dig down a little bit, we figure out one of the reasons that the economy is not growing very fast is because we're just not building houses. And why are we not building houses? Well, banks are scared to death because they've been hammered over lending practices.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people who are able to get a house now, typically, are the people with a 20% down payment.
Right. And if you look at...
Or more in some cases. Excellent credit.
Yes. I talked about this last week. The number of people between the ages of 18 and 31 that are still living with their parents is at a record level since we've been measuring it.
Right.
Now, there was a time when that was a normal thing. In the 1920s, it was not abnormal for you to stay with your parents and work on the farm. It is abnormal today.
I don't think they're working on the farm.
Now, what that means, the reason why they're doing this, and this is anecdotal as well as study information. The anecdotal stuff I get just from talking to people. And the study information, the surveys that are being done, the people that are living with their parents don't really want to stay there very long. They're saving money for a down payment.
Right.
Which means that at some point in the future, again, we're talking about further out, because how long does it take to save up?
It's called unleashed demand.
If you're talking about a $200,000 house, you need $20,000 plus enough in the bank afterwards that the bank knows you'll be able to make the payment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a significant savings for young people that was not required before.
And they're making probably less money than they would have made
right,
before.
Right, so it's going to take a while to build that up. And right. in the process of building that up, what we call that is pent-up demand. Mm-hmm. It means that there are a lot of people building towards something, and they're generally, when we see this in history and when we see it in current economic news, they hit the point in a burst. A lot of them will hit it together. And then we'll have a big boom. That is so typical when we're coming out of a recession, a major recession, that everybody saves. They get their debts under control, they save, and we're seeing it in the car business right now. People have been waiting a long time to replace their old cars.
And unfortunately, one of the things we're also seeing at exactly the same moment, and it's one of those things that you can say it's a positive or a negative. I don't know where you went. Probably a good idea to find out.
That large stink bug that was right behind my head is now missing.
Yes. One of the things that has come up is that the actual income earned by Americans for working, which is reflected in the withholding, in the amount of tax money that gets sent in each month, that number has been falling all this year. Now, I also, as I dug through the data on that, I came to the conclusion that one of the principal reasons, by the way, is the federal government's is sequester. Many. But I was thinking it was something like it was a very large number. It was in the hundreds, hundred some thousand, 109. I may be wrong on this. It may be 119 instead of 190. But I'm trying to remember here. But about 190,000 more people in the last couple of months have reported that they're working part-time and they would prefer to be working full-time. That's an unusually large jump in a very short period of time. And it turns out the vast majority of those people are federal employees.
Well, it's not just the vast majority. Well, there's a large number of them that are federal employees. There's also a large number of jobs that have been added in the private sector in the past year have been part-time as well. A very large percentage. The majority of new jobs in the private sector have been part-time here, and that's
the surveys,
part of that is Affordable Care Act.
But the surveys were saying, in this particular case, this particular jump and the resulting reduction in wages that we're seeing reported by the the Internal Revenue Service and the Treasury report how many dollars of withholding taxes show up in the Treasury each month. And when that is declining, that is a really, really, really powerful indicator that the amount of money being paid to people who are actually working on a regular basis is declining. Obviously, some of it could be in the form of cash, but that's neither here. By the way, another thing about the rise in new house and new and used house purchases, I saw some dig down data on that. I love dig down data.
Dig down data.
The rise is almost all attributable to people who are paying full cash for the whole house, which doesn't say a lot about the housing industry coming back fast. So we have this unusual economy where at the manufacturing level, we're breaking records, but down at the other end of the spectrum where people are building things like houses and people are looking for work, it's still pretty weak. And that's probably something we're going to see continuing for some time, because it's going to take a while for us to adjust, for people to get back into, get readjusted into better employment positions. There's a lot of health here. We've complained about too much debt in the economy for many years. It's being remedied. It's being remedied from one end of the economy to the other. And it's just kind of like if your family had spent too much money and you hit a crisis because you owed too much money and had too much debt, and you said, we're really going to, you know, tighten our belts around here, and we're going to not go on a vacation, and we're not going to buy anything new until we get this debt paid down. Now, you still continue to buy food, you still continue to buy the necessities, but your economic activity in your family would drop off rather dramatically, and I strongly suspect if you have a family with kids and teenagers and everything else in it, the unhappiness level will rise a little bit because you can't get new stuff.
No iPad not, this year.
And you're not going on vacation to some fancy place. There's a lot of things you're not doing because you borrowed too much money and you're trying to recover from that. Amazingly, that's almost exactly what's going on in the economy.
Yeah, we see it across the board. We see it in large businesses as well as personal lives. We're looking at the news and the balance sheets on corporations. Balance sheets on corporations are showing debt levels dropping and cash levels rising. And this has been going on since the depths of the recession. The government doesn't understand it. They think that businesses should be spending that money immediately because that will bring the economy back. But what it's the same as what you're experiencing at home. And that is, if you don't have cash in the bank, then you're not going to be able to buy stuff because the home equity line of credit that you had at one point may not be as good as it once was. They may not offer it anymore unless your credit is really, really nice. So people are paying down their debts. They're raising their cash. There has been a shift in the way we think, and it's not a temporary thing. Everyone that went through this, that actually felt the pain over a long period of time of the recession, has changed the way they think about debt. It's, for many people, a disgusting thought now when they pull out a credit card. I don't want to use credit cards. And that's a wonderful thing. The economists that were a decade ago saying we're spending too much on our credit cards are the same economists today that are saying, oh, we need to spend more with our credit cards. And I tend to say you have to have one or the other. I tend to say that if we continue moving forward with this concept in mind of saving, not having so much debt, we will get to a point where we're able to buy as much or more as we did before with our credit cards.
And
we'll be in a healthy state. The disciplined approach that it takes to do that is going to cause us to have other effects in our lives, other economic effects in our lives.
And I want to balance this out. You know, obviously, we're looking at a long, slow haul here. But there's some definitely glimmers of really bright good news. And I know this is going to sound like a really goofy place to look for good news, but in the post office. this is the point I want to make. The United States Postal Service is funded by activity. In other words, when people mail things, they make money. The nice thing about the Postal Service is they haven't cut their costs. Their costs are pretty much a fixed issue. As a result, we can see a pure economic indicator in what goes on in the Postal Service. And let's put it like this. A year ago, in the third fiscal quarter for the post office, which ended in June, at that point, during the quarter, the United States Postal Service lost $5.2 billion. Okay, now that's $5,200 million. Okay, kind of bring that around 5,200. Okay, this quarter, in the quarter ending in June, the post office announced they lost $740 million. So losing $740 million doesn't sound like a really pleasant thing. But if you think about, if for a quarter last year you lost $5,200, but for the same quarter this year you only lost $740, you're definitely seeing, and if your expenses are fixed, unmoving, and you your losses were pared that far, that is an in strong indication of dramatic improvement in economic activity. And so there's we see a lot of these going on, these little things like this going on around the country. For example, it's kind of bad news, good news deal. We're probably going to see a revision upward in the second quarter GDP. It was at 1.7. Its next revision will probably be upward, but because of the report on much higher than previously thought exports. At the same time, we're probably going to see it come down because of the fact that businesses were also reported as having shrinking inventories. Now, that sounds like, okay, so they have shrinking inventories. Why is that bad? Because it meant they were selling things made in previous quarters, which changes the GDP downward. Now, this is where it gets sort of interesting. What does shrinking inventories mean to business? It means they're not buying as much as they're selling, which means that they're anticipating a problem. What problem are they anticipating? Well, guess what? When businesses were surveyed, their problem that they're anticipating is that Congress will shut the government down and everybody will be terrified this fall, which is why I say to folks who ask me about what we're doing in our portfolio management and so on, we are kind of keeping powder dry to some degree until we get through this budgetary issue, because the last time this happened, when the fight took us to the mat and to the edge of a pretty nasty cliff, back in 2011, we saw a 16% drop in the stock market. And a lot of unhappiness, and it took several months for the market and the economy to recover from that.
It's amazing that we're talking about exactly the same scenario 2 years later, as we come up on the end of September. You know, we're looking ahead. September's coming up. We've got debt ceiling talks. We've got sequester talks. We've got exactly the same wrangling and stupidity that was going on before.
We didn't have sequester last time.
No, but that came as a result of it.
Yeah,
it came as a result of, we don't want to have another debate now on the debt ceiling, so let's do the budget talks.
Let's have a sequester.
Since we can't have the budget talks, we're going to have a sequester, and if we're going to have a sequester and the debt ceiling, we're just compounding things.
Well, it's one of those things that, without any suggestion of political propriety or impropriety or anything on anybody's part, it's a reality, it's coming. For whatever it's worth, it was a big meeting of economists and analysts up in Maine last week that was reported out last week, and they all seemed to think that the House Republicans, the conservatives in the House, would not take us to the edge again because it was such a negative issue last time around. I don't know. Maybe you guys know better than I do, but what I've heard out of the conservatives in the House suggests that they might eagerly take us to and maybe even over the edge to get a severe budget cut, because frankly the Democrats on the other side are saying we're not moving forward without some revenue increases, and the Republicans are saying we're not moving forward without major budget cuts.
Right. Revenue increases is code for taxes, and budget cuts is code for
budget cuts. it's code for less spending.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, whichever side of that argument you're on, and I think, again, that there's a lot to be said all the way around. I'm not going to say any of it because you guys will probably,
listeners
will probably say it for us. But if we get budget cuts, for example, Bell County is definitely going to feel some pain.
Yeah. And this is, again, from our perspective, long-term, we can see the strengths in the economy caused by people losing their jobs in manufacturing so that manufacturing could get more efficient. We don't think it's a great thing for the worker, but long-term, it was probably healthier for the economy. When it comes to budget cuts in the government, we feel the same way, only Bell County is the Detroit of budget cuts when it comes to federal spending, because Bell County has a massive amount of federal spending, which it'd be kind of like somebody sitting in a group of Chrysler employees a few years back saying, man, we need to cut all these employees. It's not a good thing that it's not going to resonate well.
It'll be an interesting, either way we go, the big plus, and we need to break for commercials here, by the way, the big plus is when we look around the entire world, the healthiest economy with the deepest momentum going and the greatest functional strength happens to be in the United States of America right now. So very frankly, I don't think even Congress could derail that.
It would be very well. They could do it if they worked together to do it. But that's not going to happen.
No, I mean seriously. I mean, shutting down the government during the depth of in 2011 even probably would have put us into a depression. Shutting down the government in 2013
probably not a depression. No,
it may slow things down.
We might get a negative growth in a quarter, though.
But But that doesn't mean the market's not going to react to it. But anyway, we got a break for commercials. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. On the other side, you're welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers in here haven't changed a bit. They're still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
It's probably just too hot. People aren't listening.
Well, you're turning the knob down on our volume here. And every time you move that, I have to change the volume over here.
Okay.
Just thought you should.
Well, what I try to do is I keep these little needles right here where they're peaking up around 100. I mean, that's just one of those habits I got into back in 1846.
Yeah.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff.
Whoa.
Good morning.
We have a caller.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good morning.
I've been listening to you since you started.
We're very sorry about that.
What, back in 1848? You know, Jake says that he reads the BBC every day, which I think is really, because it's a British Broadcasting Corporation.
Virtually. And he is... Virtually reading it.
He is reading a broadcast media. And I've been thinking about that for the last
Reading time. A broadcast media on my phone. Try to explain that to somebody 20 years ago.
I wouldn't touch it.
I don't know that I can explain it to me today. So, how can we help you today, sir?
Well, you guys were talking there about, just a few minutes back, you were talking about the outlook on buying houses. And I think it was Jake mentioned that they have to have some pretty stiff down payment capabilities these days.
Yep.
And excellent credit. Or else just pay cash.
And I got to thinking a little bit. You know, the numbers you were throwing out there, everybody apparently tends to think in terms of new houses. You mentioned a $200,000 house.
Actually, you mentioned a $100,000 house.
No, I think I said 200.
You did? Okay, yeah. 200. Okay, anyway.
And it occurred to me that I never bought a new house until I was 76 years old.
So you didn't buy a new house.
But you bought houses.
Oh, okay. My first house that I bought was with the idea of a rental house, which I kept for, gosh, from 1962 till probably 2000.
So why did you sell it in 2000?
I'm sorry?
Why did you sell it?
Well, I was getting up in years, and it was... Well, what it was it was in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
And
that's a good
it
reason.
Was, people were calling me wanting to buy it.
Well, that's it right there.
And
we had a housing bubble starting in 2000.
And so my brother wanted it. He lived in California, but he wanted to buy it. So In fact, he got angry because I had pretty much offered it to a guy already.
All right.
And
well, you said that you you only bought one new house, and that's when you were 76.
Yeah. Well, in between there, the first house I bought to live in was in New Jersey, and at the time I was. Let's see. We're looking.
No, okay. The house you bought was in New Jersey, but the point is,
what was it? What's
you're,
the point?
You're trying to say something here.
It was an old house. It was built in 1930.
Sure. I understand that. And there's the we look at both new house purchases and old house purchases, and for whatever it's worth, an older house right now that is in good condition.
Mm-hmm.
Is selling for about the same price as the same number of square feet in a new house.
Because there aren't that many new houses.
Which is kind of unusual, because normally new houses sell for a higher price than older houses. It's just a matter of people are looking for a place to live that they can purchase. And one of the distortions, and in either way you can look at it, one of the distortions we had in the system is you could buy houses and borrow all the money. And that raised the price of houses. But right now, we're having to cough up a very large portion of cash to buy the house. And believe it or not, that lowers the cost of housing.
It also means that if you think about a new house, generally speaking, if you do a new house, you are involved in the creation process, at least right now. There was a time when a home builder would go out there and build a whole bunch of homes and then sell them off. Now, if there's a new house being made, they want to have a contract on it. They want to have loans in work, which means there's a lot less new houses being built. Because new houses being built are a lot less, it takes so much more effort to do that. The prices on existing homes have come up a bit because there are less new houses to buy out there. And the ones that you can buy, because the hassle's so high, the prices on new houses has come down a bit. So they've reached kind of a par.
And one of the points that I wanted to make here, and the reason we've mentioned that a little earlier, was because when there's a trade for an existing house from one person to another, the house loses a little bit of value because of the fact that there's going to be transaction costs. And when somebody buys a new house, it is a shot in the arm to the economy. As a matter of fact, a new custom house is the largest multiplier. Typically about $16 enters the economy for every dollar that's spent on the house. But there are so few new houses being built right now because a lot of people are acting the way you acted. And I'll bet for you, the Great Depression is not just something you read in a book.
Oh, well, I'm 83 years old, so...
So you experienced it not directly, but from your parents talking about it. So for you...
Well, I was born in 1930.
Okay. For you, as you grew up, as a small child, you experienced the Great Depression, and your parents told you about it, so you lived in fear of it, so you didn't buy a new house until late in your life, when, by the way, a lot of other people were buying new houses. So you've actually given us an example of what goes on generationally in the economy. Whereas Jake is my son, and he's like, you're old enough to be my father, by the way. And I'm no young guy. But the point is that so two generations behind you, people are dreaming of buying new houses and would rather not buy old houses, which is not a bad thing because the old houses are getting pretty well filled up. But they can't afford to yet, but they're saving their money. But the economy, the whole point in what we were talking about is the economy is going to remain slow until we start building new houses again, because that is one of the largest employment sources in the economy. It's one of the largest multipliers in the economy. It's one of the largest incentives for people to move up in business in the economy.
Yeah. It has an impact on the people that live in the house as well. They tend to do better economically after they buy the house. And this is purely psychological, but is so measurable across the board in so many different situations. When people buy houses, they tend to do better economically. When people buy new houses, they tend to be even better economically than they would have been. And why that is a good question. You can get into a lot of debate on motivation and such, or we can just say this is a part of human nature. When you're in a place where you've made a commitment and you had an impact on the place that you're living, you truly have, if it's a bird, you've created your nest the way you want it. And then you go forward with that. It has an impact beyond just the temporary monetary impact of the creation
and
of the house.
I think your experience is really, really, really instructional in understanding what happened in the economy. The economy of the United States was slowly recovering from the Great Depression all the way into 2000 when you stepped in and bought a new house, thereby giving the economy a little spur. And a lot of other people started doing the same thing, and there was kind of a stampede into new houses. Whereas before that, people were buying older houses for a very good reason, because they wanted to come into this thing a little more conservatively. And now we're back in the position where, this is fascinating, where people are buying older houses and fixing them up. People are paying cash for houses. We're back to where we were when you were young and you were first buying houses.
That's what's going on with the organic food movement as well.
Really?
Yeah. Organic food is just what your grandparents called food.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it's hand-grown locally. It's new. It's hand-grown locally.
But these are free-range chickens. Oh, like grandma's. Right.
What
I like is the free-range avocados.
Yeah, free-range avocados.
The only reason I bought the new house was the house I had, which I had bought in 1980, was built in 64, as I recall.
And it was older than you are at that point, right?
No. Not at all. But that was a great house. I loved it. But it had an acre and a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And an in-ground pool,
mm-hmm.
neither of which my wife wanted to touch.
There it is.
There you go.
And it was in a section which was becoming commercialized.
There it is. And that's you are an example.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling.
We're about
out of time.
Thanks for the call.
You take care. And you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Well, maybe they've been listening.
I haven't been listening.
But we need to tell you that we exist off the air, contrary to popular belief.
Yes, we do not disappear for the whole week as we...
And we have a website. If you would like to make some comments, and by the way, a lot of the ideas that we get for what we talk about on the show?
On the program. We can't
see it. Emails that we get from people during the week. So you're welcome to email us at either jeff@tpwc.com or
jake@tpwc.com.
Which is really kind of nice. And you spell can, Jake with a K.
Yeah, right. As opposed to...
I mean, you could spell it like J-A-C-E
there
or
are,
something.
There are no Z's in my name.
There aren't any?
No, not even one.
Well, anyway. Yeah. And if you want to leave us a message, we also get some ideas from there. Our business is also called the Personal Wealth Coach, and locally, the telephone number, of course, area code is 254-947-1111. Otherwise, if you're outside of the local area, you can call
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
You say that so well.
I learned English as a child.
Good. And if you're ever in Slater and you want to stop by and get a cup of coffee, we're at 918 North Main Street.
Yes. The webpage also has podcasts of this crazy program that we put on every Saturday. I am constantly shocked at the traffic that we have on our webpage. People actually listen to us when they have other things that they could be doing.
That is a little frightening.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
It said something about our listeners. I thought they were smart, but now they're listening to us. Mm-hmm. That kind of throws that out the window.
When Lynn Woolley goes off, what else are they going to do?
That's true.
Yeah, that's
true.
It. Okay. So, but you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we, Lord willing, will be back next week with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. So try to stay cool out there and enjoy your weekend and have faith.
News
things
Radio
will be better.
1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas. KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.